Now, with regard to the Cabazon Indian murders, a number of Indians had objected to those killings, and they were then disposed of. Apparently, a fellow named Glenn Feldman, the attorney for the Cabazon Indian Reservation, also an individual who was a business and law partner of former representative of Senator Fred Arbeck from South Dakota.
My understanding that the senator, and he's from South Dakota now in private practice in the Black Hills area.
And an individual who had apparently represented both the Iranian and the Iraqi governments in this country, two of the foreign governments involved in this series of machinations that Danny Casolaro termed the octopus. And apparently you mentioned that Danny Casolaro had come up with some 50 to 60 pages of documents, including some on a prominent defense firm's letterhead, which would have incriminated the Justice Department in the Inslaw case.
Correct.
Now, apparently, there were a number of Indians who objected to the Wackenhut venture, and they were disposed of by elements of our intelligence system. And those crimes have never been properly redressed. The main name that you mentioned was Fred Alvarez, an individual who was killed, and also his sister, a woman named Streeter, has attempted to bring the information out, and she has been largely frustrated to date. I would also take note of something that you mentioned called Operation Exodus, which was a plan to basically place new technological developments in this country under the control of Reagan sympathizers and also the national security establishment. And another element here in this entire tangle concerns the bankruptcy courts. There's a fellow named Charles Duck, who is familiar to our listeners from his involvement in the Drug Tug case, the first of these national security series that Harry Martin investigated and that I have accessed. And apparently Charles Duck, the target of an investigation of Dexter Jacobson, another of the individuals who was murdered, Charles Duck also fits into this entire situation. One of the things that I do not understand is how Charles Duck fits into this entire tangle. I'm wondering if the, according to your information, if the Drug Tug case involves the Black Rose New World Order slush fund operation that you spoke about earlier. Is that the connection?
I don't think it's quite that direct.
Okay.
But certainly, it's my understanding that the Linvest Corporation, which was the money laundering arm, it was a Napa mortgage company, connects directly to what Calvin Robinson, who was the Drug Tug captain, states was a CIA load of hashish from Thailand. And the hashish was being laundered, the money was being laundered through Linvest.
Okay.
Linvest internationally, it's my understanding, goes through the name Invest and connects to one of the largest drug busts in the United States, internationally one of the largest in the world. And the man who supposedly is at the forefront of this is a man by the name of Marx. He's currently under indictment and is in the process of cooperating with the government in Miami. I've been fortunate enough to meet with a gentleman who was a compatriot of Marx, certainly one of his first lieutenants. And that gentleman was held for a long time in Canada, one of the longest-termed prisoners without trial in Canada. And he, without giving his name, he is still in danger. He left Canada and went to Europe. From Europe, he is now in a position where he is being placed in a position of being extradited back to Florida. Suffice to say that when Calvin Robinson's Drug Tug was intercepted by an eager young beaver from the Coast Guard in San Francisco Bay in roughly 1988, his defense was that the load that he was carrying or tugging in to San Francisco Bay was a CIA contract.
Correct. This is in, by the way, the Drug Tug series from available from the Napa Sentinel, also in the archive series from Archives on Audio that I did on that. Go ahead.
And I believe him. I didn't at first, but I do now.
Mm-hmm.
The gentleman has been writing Harry Martin on a regular basis. It's my understanding, currently is in jail in Pleasanton, last name Robinson. And more and more information that I get received seems to substantiate exactly what he says, that in fact he was a CIA operative or contractor working for our government, or at least this international government, that is doing covert operations for the benefit of private profit. And since we last talked, Dave, there's mm-hmm. been a great many publications that have dealt with the issue, and a great many people who have been placed in imminent danger as a result.
Okay. Now, speaking of people placed in imminent danger, one of the points that you made in your talk also was that as you began investigating the various tentacles of the octopus, your home was the victim of an arson attack. That's one of the points that I want to underscore, is that obviously, Virginia, you yourself are seizing the day, so to speak, and one of the goals of this particular broadcast is not only to disseminate the information you have in your possession, but I would also like to very strongly encourage networking between you and other researchers and reporters, because it seems to me that there's safety in numbers under the circumstances. As Benjamin Franklin noted hundreds of years ago, and I think it applies very aptly here, we must hang together or we shall surely hang separately. Now, you mentioned that one of the pieces of information that has come into your possession concerns a hit list, quite literally, of journalists investigating the Inslaw case. You mentioned that Mr. Souter's name was on that. What else can you tell us about this list?
Okay, I would like to take this opportunity to put this list in the public record.
Okay.
I was asked to call each one of these journalists individually and to advise them their life is in danger, that two operatives from WAC and Hutt operating under damage control have in fact been assigned to each of them, and I have what they call the SID code numbers into the computer, fed into there by WAC and Hutt from somebody that initiated the program for them.
Okay.
So if you have just a couple of minutes, I'd like to read the list.
Absolutely.
All right. Dave Bloom of NBC, your CAN number is SID B as in boy, 421.
Okay, and his last name, B-L-O-O-M?
Correct.
Okay.
Tony Casolaro, Dr. Tony Casolaro, the brother of Danny Casolaro, your CAN number is C-405. C as in Charles, 405.
Now, what does a CAN number mean, Virginia?
A CAN number is how you trigger the PROMIS software. All right, I'm listening. Listen up, hackers. This is how you trigger the PROMIS software necessary to access the WAC and Hutt list on these individuals. And from there, I will then tell you how you access their files.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. CAN number only known as DUES, D-U-E-S, CAN number D-261. Okay?
Okay, now this is a fellow named DUES?
Well, it's either a fellow or a corporation named DUES.
Spelled how?
D-U-E-S.
Okay.
Eric Nalder, N as in Nancy, A-L-D-E-R, of the Seattle Times. You've been targeted under Group 2. Your CAN number is N as in Nancy, 302. And I hope any hackers in Silicon Valley will please try to access the PROMIS software. Hack and share.
Okay.
ABC, your executive production crew. Operating for the program called Close Up. Okay, your CAN number is K, as in Kenneth, 501. Henry Brock of KOMO, your CAN number is B, as in boy, 460.
Okay, now KOMO is where?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay, and do you have any names of the people on the production crew for Close Up?
The executive production crew is all I know at this point.
Okay.
The gentleman who gave this to me, understand, got it from people who can walk past prison gates and with impunity. He had only minutes to look at it, and he did do the programs.
Okay.
Mark Souter, whom I don't care for, okay, but Mark, listen up, and you are in the Tacoma area, Seattle. Your CAN number is S-285. 285. You spent 4 hours with Michael Reconoscuto, unannounced, and taped him. You are on a list.
Okay.
Telephone, let me see what I've got here. Okay, after that, what we have is you feed into a computer, and I understand that I'm computer illiterate.
So am I. Go ahead.
While my husband understands computers, he he's only recently taught me how to feed these things in. Those people who have a CAN number feed in the CAN number, which accesses you to an abstract list. The CAN number is the computer account at Wackenhut where your number is located. You feed in your first name and then your last name, first name first. That'll put you to an abstract list. And the CAN number will access a flat paragraph, a thin paragraph, a synopsis of what they're looking for on you. And from there, you will be accessed to a synopsis, and then a summary, and then your file directory. I don't even know what I'm saying. Understand that, Dave?
Okay.
I'm only repeating for rote.
All righty. And at the end of the program, end of our discussion here, we will give information for people who would like to contact you, and they can find out more about this.
Correct. And all of this is through the software that used to be in public domain and then was improved by the private company that is InSlaw. And the software is PROMIS, P-R-O-M-I-S, and I know it's being used by the California State Attorney General's Office under the auspices of people who are supposed to be investigating the very murders that I spoke of last week.
Okay. Now, are there any other names on the list there?
Those are the names that I was given today. I should have the list in my possession within 24 hours.
Okay.
And I understand I'm on the list. I understand that Janice of Channel 9, Australian television, is on the list, but she already has her CAN number and she's aware of it.
Okay, Janice, what's her last name?
Janice Wyoskowski.
Okay.
W-Y-O-S-G-R-A-S-K-Y.
Okay.
He's been trying to break the story on the Nukenhan Bank and has been promised the interview with Michael Hand. I believe that she'll get it if she can live long enough.
All righty. Now, you mentioned to me that there had been some more mortality since we last spoke.
Well, at least more mortalities that I'm now aware of, Dave, and particularly one particular mortality I'd like to read you the press release on. Because this is the mortality that both Gary Lee of the Washington Post and the Washington Times is covering up. And therefore, I think it's particularly important. Bill Turner in Virginia, keep heart and hang in there.
Okay.
And he is the key witness that will prove on tomorrow night that Danny was murdered.
Okay, now tomorrow night, where or how?
Inside Edition, 7:30. I urge everybody to watch it.
Okay, this will be on Inside Edition, 7:30 tomorrow evening. Do you know what, you recall what network that is on? Listeners certainly can consult the television guide.
KPIX, Channel 5, I believe.
Okay.
And Bill and I had several conversations after he first contacted me. And after we were able to get the information he had given Danny out of the house, he called me back and we talked about how long he'd been meeting with Danny. It turned out to be about 14 months. Since roughly October, November of 1989. And in the course of calling each other back and forth, he said that in the Inside Edition's interviews, his wife reminded him of something he'd forgotten, the fact that Danny had been, at least at one point in time, depressed, because Danny had been very enthusiastic about a source that he was meeting, heavily involved with the intelligence community. And then the next thing they knew when they met with him, Danny indicated that his, quote, source had dried up because he had been snuffed out. And Michael keeps warning each of us that we can bow out at any time. We don't have to play the game. And he would prefer we not. But all that Bill Turner knew to tell me was that he didn't have a name, he didn't have a date of death, but that the gentleman died within the last year and that his body had been left on the floorboards of the back seat of his car at, he thought, Dulles Airport. So I called those two wonderful reporters, and the names are Kelly Shores and Paul Owens of the Martinsburg Morning Journal, and they deserve any credit anyone can give them. And I asked Kelly Shores, and she was able to put me in touch with the police officer who was doing the investigation. It turned out not to be Dulles, but Washington National Airport. The description of where the body had been found matched. And I'd like to read you the brief article that was written by Jim Carey in the Washington Times.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, the date on this is 1/31 of 91, and I read you directly from the AP release.
Okay, again, January 31st, 1991. Go ahead.
A Virginia man found slain Monday at Washington National Airport was a civilian employee at a national security agency facility at the Vint, V-I-N-T, Hill military reservation near Manassas, an Army source said. Vint Hill is a top-secret NSA signal processing station that gathers electronic intelligence data from spy satellites and other sources from around the world, another Army source said. Super-secret NSA, based at Fort Meade in Maryland, spies on foreign governments with an array of eavesdropping equipment, including satellites, ground stations, and ships. An Army source said there is concern that the death of Alan David Standorf, that's A-L-A-N, David Standorf, S-T-A-N-D-O-R-F, and I urge his family to contact me, 35, of Millwood, near Winchester, which is where Bill is, could be linked to his job, although they had limited information about his death.
Now, Bill is this fellow William Turner?
That's correct.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Standorf's body was on the back floor of his small gray Ford under a pile of luggage. The car was in the airport's short-term parking lot. Naturally, it causes us some concern, said the Army official, who did not want his name used. I urge him to be in touch with us. We're not speculating one way or another. I don't know what happened. David Hess, H-E-S-S, spokesman for the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority, said yesterday an autopsy found that Mr. Standorf died from blunt force injury, a blow or blows to the body. Authority police are investigating, he said. He said he could not give details of the wounds or identify the weapon. Authorities originally said there were no visible wounds on the body. Mr. Hess said that Mr. Standorf was apparently robbed and killed elsewhere and his body taken to the airport on January 4th, and I'm assuming from that, David, that they have a parking ticket for the car. An Army official at Vint Hill said Mr. Standorf was an administrator, and this is important, who oversaw the repair and distribution of electronic equipment. The official said Mr. Standorf resigned from his civilian job on December the 19th, effective January 14th, because his Army Reserve unit was activated. Mr. Standorf was a first lieutenant with the 450th Civil Affairs Company at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. The official said, please, if anybody's out there listening to this, contact us. He took the appropriate action of a civil servant who was preparing to go on active duty, the official said. This was the fourth body found at the parking lot at National since July of 89, the third found in the past 12 months. All three other bodies were women. And then it goes on with general information, not pertaining directly to this, David.
Okay.
And what I'm trying to get out there is information to anybody on Alan David Standorf.
Now, how does he fit into the octopus and this constellation of mortality that we've been going through? Can you describe where he fits into this operation?
All right. He was a source of Danny Casolaro's, and my understanding of this is he was providing Danny with information specifically about the finances involved with chemical warfare weapons.
Okay.
And we now know that on the Cabazon Indian Reservation, a reporter who no longer wants his name used, who now is in hiding, who is an expert in the Cabazon Reservation.
By the way, was this the individual from the Financial Times who was a colleague
no,
of Anson?
No, this is yet another one.
Okay, now that was a fellow named Mr. Raguli.
What are we talking about now?
Are we talking about the
individual from the Financial Times?
Right, the colleague of Anson Ng Young.
He was an associate thereof, and he wrote a detailed report on Mr. Bryan.
Right.
Identifying him as an operative within the intelligence community nicknamed Cash. And that's Mr. Raguli, but this is not the individual who contacted me during the past week.
Okay.
The individual who contacted me within the past week has far higher ties and has more reason to fear, and I offer him my best. I want to go on record as offering him my best, no ill feelings, and take care. And anyway, getting back to the Cabazon Reservation, which I diversed from briefly, the Indian Reservation, if in fact chemical warfare weapons were produced there, then has polluted soil. they have a Superfund problem.
You mentioned that there was a chemical waste incinerator that had been built on the reservation.
You understand
that
this is the problem. And on Indian reservations, there is no regulation. And I suggest to these people that although there's legislation that's being pushed to push regulation through, right now the problem can be covered up on the Cabazon Reservation. And right now, if any reporter who picks up your broadcast, Dave, wants to go to the Cabazon Indian Reservation and try to contact any of either the dissidents or the players, they'll find a ghost town. There are no homes on that reservation occupied.
In other words, the reservation has been evacuated?
The people who whose names have appeared in the press are gone.
Okay.
Including Linda Streeter.
That is
she's
the sister
in
of
hiding, and it's long past due. All right? She's in grave danger, and I urge her to take care wherever she is, and I know for a fact she's no longer where they think she is.
And Linda Streeter is the sister of the late Fred Alvarez, one of the Cabazon Indians who objected to this operation and was dispatched for his troubles.
And her life is in grave danger as we speak tonight.
Okay.
I can't tell you often enough that these people are in danger, that they are not paranoid. They are, in fact, under attack.
Well, William Burroughs, the writer, said a paranoid is someone who knows the facts.
Perhaps that's true. You know, I saw my husband and I have a favorite restaurant in Fremont, and it's occupied by older people. Perhaps that's what we are now. I don't know. But as we got out of the car this evening before this show, there was a car van next to us, and I have to repeat the license plate because I think it's worth repeating. And it was obviously a Vietnam War veteran who had the van next to our small Mazda car.
Mm-hmm.
And the first license plate sticker he had, it said, "For those who fought for it, freedom has a flavor the protected will never know." And the second license plate sticker said, "When one American is not worth the effort to be found, we as Americans have lost." And if we don't fight the war we're fighting, which is the war we're talking about, not the war that had the victory parades, then we have lost the freedoms that we had many men die for.
It should also be pointed out that many of the MIAs and POWs from Vietnam appear to be not only still in Southeast Asia, or a certain percentage, but that the U.S. government is actively covering off their presence because it would disclose some of these operations, such as Nugan Hand, BBRDW, and some of the things that we've spoken about. We touched on this last week. Go ahead.
And I would urge people like Mr. Gregory, who's well aware of what I talk about here tonight, and he's down in the L.A. area, and I'm so familiar with his motorcycle run to Washington. I urge him to make very public the amount of missing in action who were missing in action as a result of the Cambodian operation, as opposed to the Vietnam War, and therefore were part of the black money that came out of Southeast Asia. And I don't think we have a government that wants to find those people. And Mr. Kerry, who's playing both ends of the fence at this point and is in a position, like the gentleman congressman who investigated Jim Jones, a very precarious position, I urge him care.
Okay.
Now, the article that you mentioned, written by Eric Reguli, occurred in the August 19th, 1991 edition of the Financial Post. And the headline read, "Questions Grow as Big Daddy Watches His Empire Crumble."
Okay, now once again, this is from which publication and date now? August 19th, 91?
This is the Financial Post, which is the Canadian equivalent of the Financial Times, August 19th, 1991.
Okay.
And it's the first publication that I have seen that gets close to the truth about, and I put, quote, Dr., quote, Earl Bryan.
Which, as you mentioned last week, Dr. Earl Bryan apparently did not formally complete his required medical training.
Not at Stanford, he didn't. He was one quarter short.
All righty.
And it's a very interesting article. many people consider it pablum, but it broaches areas that I'm certain that Dr. Bryan did not want to broach. For example, his nickname within the intelligence community was Cash.
Right. Also, Big Daddy. We mentioned that last week, or you mentioned that last week.
Correct. Big Daddy apparently was a subsequent terminology they used with him. Cash, on the other hand, I think had more to do with what Michael Reconosciuto was alleging. In fact, it carried the cash out of the Golden Triangle, the bank codes necessary to transfer the cash. At least that's what Michael Reconosciuto is alleging. The part about Big Daddy strikes me as pertaining more to his holdings in Financial News Network and UPI. And this article deals specifically with something that to me is very apparent. They question why he would want to acquire UPI, which was a money-losing proposition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obvious to me it's for the control of the news media.
And basically, obviously, that hit list from Wackenhut would be a more dramatic way of doing the same thing.
More explosive and more public, but more dramatic. I don't think the CIA is normally this public, and I think the problem exists because now you're beginning to have local tentacles of Denny's Octopus being exposed, and they're hoping to keep it local and never get it to the head.
Now, Virginia, you mentioned, too, that there is the death of a British journalist named Jonathan Moyle. We have talked about this and mentioned it in the context of the Inslaw case because he was investigating a Chilean-based firm called Cardoen Industries, spelled C-A-R-D-O-E-N, which was involved not only with arms transfers to Iraq for Saddam Hussein, but according to Ari Ben Menashe and others, Cardoen Industries was also involved with the trafficking around of the pirated Promise software. And you had recently come across something in connection with the death of Jonathan Moyle?
Yes, and I spoke with Anthony Moyle today in England.
His father?
His father, and I urge his father to keep heart because I think that he'll live to see the slayer of his son, if not brought to justice, at least exposed. He's a lovely man, and I'm sorry, and I urge him courage. But on the Cardoen end of the connection with Jonathan Moyle,
mm-hmm.
I would like to introduce at least another aspect, and that someone that I trust indicates that I'm looking in the wrong arena. If I believe the Image magazine piece, which I read to the gentleman on July the 28th, 1991, a really well-done expose.
By the way, for the benefit of people who eventually hear this on tape, Image Magazine is a publication that's included in the San Francisco Sunday Examiner and Chronicle. Go ahead.
And the author here is David Ackerman. David Ackerman, in talking with Jonathan's dad, is Channel 4, and this is British television, so I'm not really certain of the call letters. But I have a call in to David Ackerman. I urge him to call me. But there's another aspect of this that I would urge him also to explore, a common denominator, if you will, that I find very interesting. And the common denominator has nothing to do with the Cardoen, I guess that's how you pronounce it, the Chilean contractor.
Okay.
I'm being told that gentleman would never do this because it would make his entity too public. It would do the same thing to that gentleman that has happened with the Nichols family down at the Capuzon Reservation. You're not, if you are in intelligence, you are not public. If you are public, you get turned over.
Okay.
And so there's a small paragraph here that I picked up on that has to do with a gentleman that I understand is now in Southern California, and I'm looking for it desperately as we talk. By the name of Armitage.
Now, is this Richard Armitage?
Yes.
He is now, or he was basically, the person involved in negotiating the Philippine military base leases.
I would urge David Armitage, who I have yet to speak to.
David or Richard?
Let me see now. Hold on.
Richard Armitage was one of the principals who figures in the Iran-Contra scandal.
No, hold on. That's interesting, too. I didn't know that. Pardon me. David Ackerman.
Oh, David Ackerman, okay.
Okay, to look at Richard Armitage and look at him very closely and get in touch with me, and I'll give you my name. It's Chief, let me see, the man Moyle is said to have reported to at the ministry, Air Chief Marshal Sir Michael Armitage, insists, Moyle didn't work for me or the MOD. I saw him as an individual perhaps 7 or 8 times. There was no classified version of his thesis, to which I say bullshit, for the record. All right?
Okay, now bear in mind we are on radio, so the FCC, we have to...
We can't use that word.
Edit our language accordingly, right?
All right. I'll try to do that.
So the individual then was not Richard Armitage, one of the Reagan administration national security establishment, but one of Moyle's superiors.
Well, I don't know, because you know more about the intricacies of the political arena than I do. But I'm very good with names, and what I'm looking at is Air Chief Marshal Sir Michael Armitage.
Okay, that is not Richard Armitage, though. Go ahead.
All right. That individual appears in the documentation that I have from my source and has a home in Southern California. And this article that I have been faxed indicates that as big fish go, they don't come much bigger than Sir Michael Armitage. The denial that Jonathan Moyle, in effect, ever reported to him or had a classified version of his thesis is deeply resented by Moyle's family.
It's also interesting that one of the people involved in the drug tug case, the Ila Jesusita, was a fellow named Kenneth Armitage. Same spelling.
Interesting. Okay. All that I'm prepared at this time to talk about is the fact that that bears further investigation.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I think is essential, Virginia, and I would emphasize to listeners that I myself am not in possession of the documentation underlying Virginia's arguments here. She does have that documentation. She had offered to place some of the secret documents with yours truly. Due to a combination of time and space factors, I really don't have space. My apartment and storage area are kind of generally overflowing. And because of the fact that I deal with other aspects of the national security establishment as well, I don't feel I would have the time or the space to do these documents justice. But as I indicated earlier in the broadcast, I believe that the only way that these things are going to be successfully investigated and the situations brought to justice is for a number of different people, a number of different reporters and researchers to undertake the investigation jointly. When Don Bowles, a reporter for the Arizona Republic, was killed in a bomb assassination in 1977, a number of journalists, sort of a consortium of journalists, went down and investigated the organized crime infrastructure in Arizona underlying his death, and came up with a magnificent report, which basically helped blow open the story that Don Bowles died trying to get out. And I think that a similar type of MO would be essential under the circumstances in order to investigate the octopus, as Daniel Casolaro put it. Now, what I would like to do, Virginia, would be to put other journalists and investigators within our listening radius, or those who would hear it via tape at some point, in touch with you. Now, can you give a phone number and address so that others can contact you in order to obtain some of the documentation and also to network with you in order to not only pursue the case but also to enhance your own personal security?
Okay, I appreciate that. I want to first apologize to those that I have not been able to supply the documentation to the response I've received from your program, which was the first program I ever appeared on, was rather overwhelming. My name is Virginia McCullough, McCullough. My telephone number in the small town of Sonol, we have a dog for mayor, is area code 415-862-2362.
One more time.
862-2362.
That in the 415 area code. Go ahead.
Correct. Fax, if you will, because it's the last vestige of American freedom, is 862-0145.
862-0145, also in the 415 code.
We are a small town. I live within a block of the post office. Therefore, you first put post office box 589, and then you put the street address 86 Kilcare, like the Irish, Kilcare Road, And then the town of Sunol, my husband sitting here shaking his head at me, S-U-N-O-L, 94586. But keep in mind, David, I'm not afraid. We had a huge sign over our front gate that was a skull and crossbones with dollar signs for eyes that said bankers not allowed for 2 years, so I'm not a low-profile person.
Okay, now once again, your name is Virginia McCullough, M-C, capital C-U-L-L-O-U-G-H, phone number 415-862-2362, fax number is 415, and what was the rest of it again?
Fax number is 415-862-0145.
And the address again?
The address again, Post Office Box, Nina Martin.
Okay, now one more time, as I just had to turn over our tape cassette. If you could give your post office box the address again, please.
Okay, Post Office Box 589,
mm-hmm.
86 Kilcare Road.
Right.
Sunol, 94586.
Okay, and once again, that was the May 6th, 1991 edition of the Daily Journal?
Correct.
Okay.
It's called Bankruptcy Court, one of a continuing series.
Oh.
And Nina Martin is one of the finer reporters in the Bay Area.
Okay, and again, in closing, I want to emphasize to the listening audience that I think it is essential not only for the successful resolution of these investigations, but also for the continued security of Virginia McCullough and others involved in this, including yours truly, that other people get involved in this. And as Benjamin Franklin noted so many years ago, we must hang together or we shall surely hang separately.
Thank you, Dave.
Okay, thank you, Virginia.
Good night.
Good night now. And that concludes the prepared portion of tonight's program. We do have a few minutes left for phone calls, so I will take a short musical break. Area code 415-941-2500 is the number. We only have about 15 minutes, but we have not had any listener phone-ins for a couple of weeks now, except, of course, for Virginia's call. But area code 415-941-2500 is the number, and as soon as I can get a couple of calls screened, I'm going to go ahead and we will proceed with the phone-in session, such as it is, of tonight's program. In the meantime, let me play a short message while we're waiting for phone calls to be screened.